You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This DIY feature is proudly sponsored by Paintsmiths Long Beach. Service and knowledge with pleasure.
I visit Paintsmiths for all things paint and revamp.
I visit Paintsmiths for trade and paint contractor advice.
And we are here for each individual or business in the valley. Service and knowledge with pleasure. Paintsmiths Long Beach. Bulalo Drive, Sunnydale.
It's 10:30 and time for the DIY feature with Sean Anderson from Anderson Improvements. Sean will be chatting to John Mole, a specialist construction services. Our topic this morning, requirements for buildings. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
And good morning, John.
Good morning,
welcome to Zone Radio, the voice of the valley.
We have a special guest, John Mole. He's a local engineer in the valley, I think more than 20 years in the valley. I think, I don't know how many years, John.
I can't remember that far back.
So, to builders, he's a local hero, yet they are few and far between. And, very important chap to have around with any construction work. And we're going to run through the different legalities and what's required from the small jobs to the larger projects that need to happen. So, John, let's just let's start from the beginning, because the council has now made it rule that any project has to be signed off by the engineer, and there's a form that needs to be filled in by you to sort of take on the project.
Sean, there's always good and bad with anything that the bureaucrats undertake. And over the years, the municipalities have lost their engineering staff by design or by default, I don't know. But the bottom line is that they have then harnessed private enterprise engineers, and the engineers have to be appointed for each project. And you fill in an appointment form, and then the municipality sits back and allows the process to unfold. The responsibility for all the structural elements are then with a private individual, who then issues a completion certificate at the end. There is a plus to this, because the private individual carries professional indemnity insurance, so that should he make a mistake, the owner of the premises or the building is covered for that type of error. Before, if there was an error, the owner simply had to absorb the costs.
Exactly. So the council, what I've seen with what we do, is that they have pulled back completely. They have very little involvement. As I said, about 10 or 15 years ago, my foundations, they used to be a qualified, decent person from the council used to come and inspect the foundations. If they found a fault, they would then recommend that I get hold of an engineer. That has fallen away. So basically, all onus has become now part of the engineer's responsibility. We as builders will obviously follow everything the engineer asks us to do. And so that's what I've seen happen, which is... The council basically just sees that the house is where it's supposed to be, and that you have followed the plan, but that's as far as they go.
Well, there's an element to this whole lot that one needs to take cognizance of, and that is that the fact that you have a structural engineer to assist you, you may not, and it's inadvisable to sideline the municipal inspector. Municipal inspectors still needs to be notified, and he needs to conduct whatever inspections he wishes to do. So compliance is that he be notified.
The standard would be to dig the foundations, bring the building inspector in, be on good terms with him, always be nice and friendly. They don't like it when you get put up an argument or get on their bad side. But what I've seen is, over the years, the involvement has been getting far less and less. And on a project, I might see them even once or twice, the first day and then maybe the last day. So there's Yeah, but we're going to run through all the engineering requirements because there's quite a few. You've got your roofing certificate that we need from you. Any slabs? There are outside engineers that get involved with when it comes to hollow core slabs or but any structural beams, concrete beams, your slabs. And then we also talk about retaining walls because that often happens here in the valley. We got a lot of mountain terrain and soft sand areas. So, so we'll look at what's required there on your side. If you had to take on a project, what forms do we need and what would you normally have to sign off?
The architects have to make all the submissions and it goes through a computer portal at the municipality. And in doing so, when they submit the plans, there is a form called a Form 2, which is the engineer's appointment form, which is very detailed in that there are 7 pages. And each category for which the engineer will carry responsibility is enumerated on there and has to be signed for individually, such as foundations, walls, staircases, roofs. It's all annotated on there. As far as the building inspector is concerned, he will come out and he will check that the building lines are not being built over.
Encroached, yeah.
And amusingly, sometimes people will start building on the wrong plot. So now the building inspector is very effective in stopping that from happening.
We've seen some crazy things in the past.
Yeah. As an aside to this, we often get called out because people phone and say, "My building is cracking," and you go there and you find that it's subsiding. What has happened is that when they dug the trenches for the foundations, they didn't get onto good ground, and many times I've been presented with the hypothesis that, but we put lots and lots of steel in the foundation. How could that happen? And I think it's perhaps counterintuitive that people see that if they put a lot of reinforcing steel in the foundation, that it's a very strong foundation. But if I can just peel that back briefly, whatever strong foundation you put down on soft soil is going to go down with everything. The for reinforcing in the concrete foundation does not stop it from going down. Unfortunately, the only solution is to dig until the foundation is on competent ground so that it can carry the loads. I think
I've cursed you before. I think I had to dig 3 meters deep once for a foundation. So you weren't in my good books. but the house is still standing.
That's the important bit, because then you would have cursed me twice if your building had cracked. I think there's always a solution. If you dig a very deep trench, there's an awful amount of bricks that you have to put in there to get the building up back to the ground level. And that is a costly exercise. This can be alleviated by digging the trench to the right depth and then backfilling it with a sand and cement mix, which goes off very hard, much harder than the normal ground. And then you can place your foundation at a reasonable depth so that you don't have too many bricks in the trench.
So you're reinforcing the soil, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we've done that on a few projects for you as in the past as well, underpinning at intervals. Yeah.
It's quite distressing because when the house cracks, normally you find that they simply refrain from digging the last 1 meter that they should have dug. Mm. The soft, if you go 1 meter below the foundation that is settling, you find competent ground. Mm. So it's just that 1 meter that they just neglected to dig.
Yeah. For the average person at home, there's a very simple test that engineers even apply today, and that would be with your little steel rod. You know, if it goes too far down, you know. If it goes easily, penetrates the ground too quickly, then there's an issue.
There's two basic principles that you must apply. You have a look at all the houses, the neighboring houses, If they're full of cracks, then you've got a problem. If they're all standing up well, then you're in an area that is geotechnically sound.
Mm.
Well, now all you've got to worry about is the bottom of your own trench.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think we've saved somebody's house in Tukai once, and we had to literally jack the whole house up and redo. I think that house was in a bad shape.
I did get feedback. That gentleman sold that house, and many years later, yes. Through the back door, I got very, very complimentary feedback.
Yes.
And he was very happy because his house had weathered the storm from there on.
Yeah, yeah. I think he would have lost his investment. It was, I think, the worst case I've seen or had to rescue. But that involved a lot of engineering. You know, it was a complete redo, but with leaving the roof intact.
That house was on an old riverbed.
Exactly. So you talk about ground level. I think it was either riverbed or a dump site or something where the foundations were compromised. So it's always good to even buy in a new house if you have cracks there, but not to get mistaken for hairline cracks. Because I get called for, these little hairline cracks, and then it's normally settlement cracks over the years, where you know, it's plaster cracks almost, you know.
You will find that people are expecting the same sort of level of finish as the motor car that they buy. This is not applicable to buildings. The buildings are on an elastic medium. The ground is elastic, and there will be certain movement and bedding in. Any homeowner must do normal, preventative, and maintenance on a regular basis in order to keep the premises looking good. The fact that there is a crack might be an indication that one needs to watch it, but it's not an indication that the building is failing. That's how they do behave.
Mm, mm. Yeah, for sure. We'll go on to retaining walls, and that's a whole other kettle of fish.
This is a pet subject of mine.
Yeah.
You know, some clever fellow has said that if you give me a big enough lever, I can push the world over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a retaining wall that is 2 meters high is not a very big lever, and the forces on the retaining wall is proportional to the square of the height. So a 2 meter retaining wall, 2 twos are 4.
Mm-hmm.
If you push that up just 1 more meter, 3 threes are 9.
Mm-hmm.
Is more than double. But if you've got a 4 meter high retaining wall, 4 fours are 16.
Mm-hmm.
But you just add 1 more meter, 5 fives are 25. It gets
dangerous.
It gets very, very dangerous. And there are builders that build very nice, strong walls. And I had a discussion with the one gentleman. He said, I build very strong walls. And I said to him, yes. And when it falls over and lies down, it will still be a very strong wall, but it will be lying down.
Yeah.
And I said to them, why don't you fall over? And he looked puzzled, and I said, the reason you don't fall over is because you've got feet.
That stick out.
If a retaining wall gets a decent
footing,
then it can't rotate and it won't fall over.
That's a simple explanation for the person at home. It's all about the footing. I mean, I think you've given me some footings that are like 1.8 meters. I mean, and the steel involved is insane. And then I've even done a 3-layer wall required, but that was for something, for damp issues and things. But, get an engineer, let them inspect. Every job is different. I think John sees every different application out there. It doesn't always work. The one idea doesn't work for the other idea. So, you know, it's always good to get someone in.
Sometimes these things are counterintuitive for people who are not in the building industry, and the surprises arrive later. But
normally in the cost, because that's where they start to get worried.
The truth is, the difference between doing it correctly and doing it wrong the cost of that installation is very, very small difference. If you just provide a little bit of extra concrete and reinforcing steel, your retaining wall won't fall over.
And then you won't be rebuilding it in 10 years' time, or even five, or even whatever.
The wisdom in this is to ask somebody who does know. I don't know anybody who does fillings in their own teeth.
Mm.
You go to a dentist who knows how to do it, and then it's a simple exercise.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, we can also look at, let's look at average home. It's a project that we're busy with, or we do often, and the client wants to knock an internal wall down. But he's not quite sure now if this wall is supporting the roof. It's a tiled roof, so there's a lot of weight. There's always a lot of weight on a tiled roof. And often people look at the situation and say, no, we can just knock this wall down. And how wrong they can be. You know.
Yes, well, again, a lot of these buildings have been put up many, many years ago, and they have stood the test of time. But as soon as you make an alteration, you affect that. Now, if you buy your roof truss from a reputable company, they will span from the outside wall to the outside wall, and there's no need for them to rest on any internal wall in the house. And along comes somebody with a good idea to knock the wall out in the middle. But the old builders have positioned the trusses so that they're resting on the internal wall. Then you can't do that without providing another support in the, you know, by putting in a steel beam or something to carry that load.
Exactly. And it could even be a single wall, because it's basically just preventing the bow. You know, as builders, we always look at a single wall as not supporting. It's been a common thing, but that's mistaken. Yeah.
If I might be permitted, I had an incident in Camps Bay where I was called out, and there was just a little half brick wall on the corner of the kitchen counter. Now, everybody knows a half brick wall is not a load bearing wall.
That's what we think. Yeah.
And this was just a little wall on the corner of the counter. And they asked me, bearing in mind that we were on the bottom floor of five stories, can they knock it out? Traditional wisdom would say, it's a half brick wall, you can knock it out.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't understand how the structure was holding out. So I insisted that they find the engineer's plans for that. And it turns out the drawings were in feet and inches from 1957.
Wow.
It was a reputable engineering company in Cape Town. And what they had done is they had introduced into a half brick wall little structural steel columns.
Crazy.
That half brick wall was holding up another four stories.
Wow.
And I am eternally grateful that some little hocker inside of me said, don't do this.
Wow.
Because the current wisdom would say, it's not a problem, knock it out.
It's what we think. It's always what we think. If we look at a single wall, it's not load-bearing. Yeah,
the point is, caution is always very important. Yeah.
We have a question for you. If a pool is built after a house has been built, does it impact on the structure, and does one need an engineer to consult before building the pool? Thank you, Unicorn.
Well, normally the pool would be put in so that it is not too close to the house and therefore not affected. But if you are excavating next to the foundations of an existing house, you are undermining them. The pool needs to be kept away from the house, normally by the same distance away from the house as the depth of the pool. Then you shouldn't have a problem.
Hmm. Okay, yeah. Let's have that answers the question, Unicorn.
Because the issue we're having in the industry, there's cowboys everywhere. And as you talk about that little wall that you were talking about. And then you'll get plumbers who say, no, we'll... Because if it's in a kitchen area, we'll just knock that wall out and, and put whatever, you know. But this is where I'm very cautious on any little wall I take down. I have to really think about, is this going to affect the property? I mean, imagine those four stories above that. That would be insane. You know. So, but the problem is there's guys out there that are doing that. They just think, oh, single wall, not don't have the relative documents to show they know what they're doing, and they just go for it.
You know, so many of these things turn on your understanding as soon as somebody enunciates what the problem is. You'll get an electrician or a plumber that will cut a groove in a wall vertically from the bottom to the top to put in a pipe. And there's absolutely no problem with that because the pipe goes in and it's plastered.
Mm-hmm.
But the same plumber or electrician may come along and cut a horizontal line right across the whole wall. That whole wall now has got nothing to stand on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And once somebody says it, it becomes so patently obvious that mm-hmm. you can see.
Mm-hmm.
But the NHPRC goes around and they issue non-compliances for this type of behavior all the time.
Yeah, I often have issues with you do have issues with plumbers, electricians. I'll have a plumber run a vertical pipe, then my electrician cuts over the plumber's pipe, or the plumber cuts over the electrician's wires. So it's like they're playing zigzag on the walls, you know. Luckily today, I mean, they're not chasing too deep into it. It's normally, you know, they're doing minor cuts, and often if we can get into the cavity, they try and do that. So it's fairly safe on what we're doing. But again, you know, having the engineer give his input, discuss on where things are happening, what walls you take down, I would definitely get advice. Yeah, it's just your roofing. I mean, where you have outside engineering, you'll get a truss plant that will design you a roof truss. They certify that truss. But that doesn't mean that the roof is engineer hasn't got the A19 certificate. The engineer has to sign the A19, the roof off, and then he'll supply you with the A19.
Yeah, sometimes the only comment that comes to mind is, oh dear. it is standard practice to tie the roof down with a steel strap. It's called hoop iron strap.
Yeah.
The hoop iron strap is built into the brickwork and goes up and ties the roof down. Sometimes the hoop iron is not built into the brickwork. And what I have come across is where the roof has been tied down with a steel strap, which goes over the truss, and is fastened to the wall plate. The wall plate is just a horizontal piece of timber.
It's loose, as the wall plate is just for the rafters to sit on.
There is absolutely no tie down for the roof at all. And when the carpenter was confronted with this information, he looked puzzled. But I mean, if you say to him, look, if this roof is going to fly off, it's going to take this little wall plate with it.
It's going to fly away. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I've got a standard saying that if you want your face on the front page of the newspaper, have your roof fly off.
Yeah.
They love it. There's pictures everywhere. And you look really silly because at the time the roof comes off, all your furniture is in the house and it's raining.
Oh, that would be lovely. Lovely to watch. But John, yeah, I think just to end off on all the certification, we have A19, which is your roof certificate. You would have, even if they supply, HoloCore supplies their own engineer that does, but you have superiority over that.
The engineer's appointment forms have a facility. It's called a Form 3, so that you have a basic engineer who oversees everything. If there's a specialist engineer who's providing a service, he fills in a Form 3, which is subjugated to the Form 2 appointment. The main engineer oversees the other engineer that's providing a service that the main engineer is not covering.
Mm.
But the point is, you have an engineer who sees to it that any other services are covered.
Mm.
And then you have to fill in what is a completion certificate called a Form 4.
Yeah, that's a, and so and it's basically all falls on your head as an engineer assigned to the project. And every staircases, if we build a staircase, if there's where the engineers are not involved, and I don't think John really cares much about what happens, is finishing. And that comes down to the color of your walls and what cupboards you have in the house and et cetera, et cetera. So
I'm quite able to appreciate the works of the people who do the finishing works, but it's not my area of expertise. And
he just makes sure the house doesn't fall down.
I don't and can't offer any architectural advices at all. Asking an engineer for architectural advice is really like asking the dentist to fix your car. The engineer is dangerous when it comes to paint colors. Stay away from it.
Different shades of brown.
John, is there any other weird stories you can tell us about building that you when you've gone on site?
Well, something comes to mind. I was interviewed for a position with an engineering company, and something was put to me. If you have a window cleaner or a painter painting the side of a high-rise building, they put a steel beam out from the roof and the gondola hangs off a cantilevered beam so that you can raise and lower the gondola under that cantilevered beam, and it's on a pulley. So you release the rope and the gondola goes down, and when you get to the window you wish to clean, you tie the rope onto the gondola. And the weight on the cantilever beam is the weight of the gondola plus the window cleaner. However, it's rumored that when he stopped the gondola at a particular position, there was a very, very nice spike sticking out of the wall. So instead of tying the rope onto the gondola, he tied the rope onto the spike.
Lovely.
And the whole shooting match came down. Why is that? The moment he released the rope, and when it was tied to the spike in the wall, he doubled the force on the cantilever that was holding it all up.
And it collapsed.
When it's hanging off, there are two ropes. The one goes up over the pulley and down again. Each one of them is carrying half the weight of the gondola. As soon as he tied it to the building, each one of the two ropes is carrying the full weight of the gondola, which doubled the weight on the cantilever, and everybody got very sad.
Yes, well, I mean, I'm sure someone was hurt. Or
seriously?
Well, yeah.
The thing is that there are things out there that are counterintuitive, and you need the engineer just to make sure there are no accidents.
Right, that's perfect. Is there anything else you want to share before we say goodbye?
No, just do your homework on any project and make sure you have the right people involved. It could be a very costly and nightmarish event.
Yes. And John?
Good luck and happy building.
Yes, thank you. And you want to give out your details, please?
Well, it's short, it's Anderson Improvements. It's 083-316-5752. Yeah.
And John?
John Mole.
Yes.
072-460-9468.
Thank you very much for coming in and sharing your knowledge and expertise with us.
Thank you.
Have a lekker day. Bye.
That DIY feature was brought to you by Paint Smiths Long Beach. Service and knowledge. With pleasure. I visit Paint Smiths for all things paint and revamp.
I visit Paint Smiths for trade and paint contractor advice.
And we are here for each individual or business in the valley. Service and knowledge. With pleasure. Paint Smiths Long Beach. Bulalo Drive. Sunnydale.